what's going on with everybody this week? What's going on?
Oh.
No, it's cool. It's not weird.
Things are going on.
What's going on?
Lots of things. It's October, which means Halloween.
Yeah. It won't be October when we release this, though.
You're right.
It'll be past November, October.
Which means Thanksgiving and my birthday.
Mm-hmm. They're on the horizon.
Oh, cool. How old are you going to be? Do you want to talk about it?
32.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, cool.
Put your age out there.
69.
I thought you were younger than me. I don't know you're older than me.
Nice.
Are we all similar in age, actually? You're 31 right now, right?
I'm also 31 right now.
You were born in 86?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when?
May.
May. So you're just barely old. No, wait. Yeah, barely older than me.
Yeah, I thought ours were pretty close. Yeah.
You're the baby, Jordan.
I'm the baby. If we were playing a lot of board games, I get to go first.
What?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm youngest player at the table.
Remember the last board game I played? It was like, no, love letters, like the last person to go on a date.
Yeah.
It goes first.
More and more lately, I feel like board games and card games like that have like really weird criteria. Like I'm trying to think, some of my favorites, in Small World, the player with the pointiest ears goes first.
Mm. That one's weird.
Okay, but I think it's good. In Forbidden Island, it's the person who last visited an island that goes first.
What's Forbidden Desert?
I just played that.
I think it was the person who almost died of dehydration recently.
Okay,
no, that's not true.
That's definitely not it. Yeah.
There was one that was like...
But for a second, you guys were like, maybe...
No,
okay.
Not really.
All right,
not even for a second. There was one that was like the person with like the steeliest gaze. Oh, it was the game I played on Game of the Game on Geek & Sundry.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was that?
It was, I don't remember the name of the game now. It was a post-apocalyptic deck builder.
Hmm.
No, not post-apocalyptic. I guess it was a cult Cthulhu deck builder. Mm-hmm. And it was like the person with like the most like... it wasn't steely. It was like hypnotic eyes or something.
With the most hypnotic eyes.
Hypnotic eyes.
Wow, what a crazy subjective thing.
So it's a weird thing like...
Am I hypnotizing you?
Are you into this?
I think it was Becca who got it.
Okay.
Even though I argue, it was like, no, it's definitely me, but all right, this is your show. I'll allow it.
Fine.
I'm going to allow this.
But I won, so who cares?
All right.
That's good. Those are good criteria.
Good.
No, I said that's good. But let's good, too.
Let's good.
Let's good it up, guys.
I'll just cut that part out.
Don't cut that out at all. Don't you dare. Don't you touch this.
Let's good is the best thing we've
this
ever
said. This is gold.
Said.
This is gold. Our new catchphrase is let's good.
Let's good.
Experience players.
Great.
Let's good.
Let's good. Oh, no. Great. That wasn't a segue, though, so we can't.
Now it is.
Wait, it doesn't have to be a segue. Are you saying I have to point it out as a segue in order for us to, like, start it off?
It doesn't feel natural without one now.
I think you should just say it. Let's good.
Let's good. Speaking of Forbidden Desert and sand.
No. The segue is let's good.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't matter. Like, that's how we are like, all right, guys, let's good.
We have to start this banter over. This is ridiculous.
No, this is gold. This is gold, man.
I've had too much coffee.
Let's good.
Let's good. Hey, everybody. This is Experience Pointers. And we are a trio of RPG players and game masters who have all sorts of opinions on how games should be run.
Good opinions, bad opinions.
It's up to you to decide.
We got them.
So let's go around the table and let's good.
Let's good.
We're going to make this happen.
Hi, I am Megan Caves, and I don't really know what else I need to say.
Okay, cool. Yeah, don't tell anyone anything about yourself. My name is Jordan Caves Callerman. I am someone who has been playing RPGs for most of my life. Or at least thinking about playing RPGs for most of my life, because when I was young, I couldn't find anyone to play with me. But I'm going to go ahead and count that as experience that I have under my belt.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way. I'm Garav, by the way, that's me. Yeah, pretty much I've been looking at monster manuals and starter boxes for my entire life. I'm like, oh, nobody wants to play this. And I got to LA and everybody wants to play it. So this is great.
Yeah, fighting people off with a stick that want to play in your game.
Okay, well, I didn't know I needed to say like the things that I've done. I thought we'd already done that. But yeah, I like to play RPGs and have done that for a long time.
So that's why
I'm here.
So let's dive into what we're going to be talking about this episode, which is railroad games versus sandbox games. We had someone contact us on Twitter, at Mask of Winter, asking us to do an episode about RPG glossary terms, like just kind of different things, I guess just common phrases and terms that get thrown around whenever you're discussing RPGs, because not everybody knows what all those terms mean and all of the connotations associated with them. But two of the things he brought up were railroad games and sandbox games, and we felt like just talking about those two different types of game probably merited an episode, since I feel like most campaigns, most GMs are either trying to shoot for one or the other when they're creating a game in general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Those two different types of games.
So should we start with one and kind of talk about it and then jump to the other?
I think we should start by defining what each of them are.
Good idea.
And then we can kind of dive into talking about those.
Okay.
So do you guys want to define them or shall I?
Well, I think we can all do
it
together.
Let's all do it together.
We just start talking at the same time?
Yes,
yeah.
all right. At once.
But we have to say the same things.
And, we have to say it in sync.
Yep.
Too.
Okay, and go.
Maybe just one of us.
Okay, we'll do it. So railroad games... And I think the term railroad gets a bad rap a lot of the time, but in general, a railroad game is viewed as something in which your players are moving sort of on a predetermined narrative track from one beat to another, heading towards like a final climactic moment. So,
mm-hmm.
So a railroad is sort of like just the one direction the story goes, heading through its story arc, like the narrative arc of it, like that.
Yeah, that's, I think, though, sort of almost another definition in the negative way that I think it's used is in which it's like, well, there's only one way this can go. And I mean, when you're doing an RPG, it's sort of an improv game. You know, things come up. People want to go this way or that way. And then I feel like when it's used negatively, it's about the GM or DM not letting them go this way or that way to get to the same location.
Right, which we'll dive into when we're talking more in-depth about railroads.
Right, but to me that's part of the definition.
Yes, yeah, that is a pretty common way of it being referred, of games that are referred to as railroad games, or things where there is only one track to go on. Whereas sandbox games are more like, think about the tabletop equivalent of like Skyrim or Fallout or a video game like
mm-hmm.
that, where you're sort of dropped into a world and you choose where you want to go, who you want to interact with, and what things you want to assign importance to as players in the world.
Yeah.
They
give you a box of sand. You decide what to do with the sand. You can make a castle.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a fort, which is a different kind of castle, but, you know, it has its differences.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. I mean, one has a much more militaristic purpose.
I mean, it depends on the castle.
That's true.
Yeah.
I feel like we're probably getting off topic as far as like following
I
that,
mean,
but
we
can't talk about castles versus forts. Will be a later episode of Experience Pointers because we could really do a deep dive.
Oh yeah,
we should do that one at the beach.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do an at the beach recording of
so
castles versus forts.
So one at a steakhouse, one at the beach.
Okay.
Got it.
Make a note of that, Gruff. But yeah, and then sandboxes are sort of like, yeah, there's all these pieces that are sort of scattered around in the sandbox, and you guys can just sort of gravitate towards whichever thing is interesting to you
mm-hmm.
and tackle things in any order.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the loose definition of the two. But let's start with railroads.
Okay.
So railroad campaigns, I feel like, are in general what most RPG campaigns tend to be.
Mm-hmm.
Are railroads.
Well, that kind of follows, I mean, at least in my mind, basic story structure. You know, this thing happens and this thing happens.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to build up to something. Like you said, you kind of need to hit particular points to achieve that. I suppose you could do the same thing in sandbox. Although, I don't know that I've played a sandbox game.
You have played in some sandbox games, yes.
Well, I'm so glad you're here to remind me of the things that I've done.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about games that I remember
sure.
running for you that
no,
were
no,
sandbox
I
games.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Well, yeah, yeah. But I think it was interesting to me when I first heard somebody use the railroad term in a negative connotation because I was kind of like, why is that bad?
Yeah.
Well, I think in general, when people are talking about a railroad game...
Mm-hmm.
That's different than someone saying, it feels like my GM is railroading us.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, to be railroaded is generally considered a negative thing. And
right.
I think that's when you get into what you were talking about, Megan, where people feel like there is only one way for them to progress.
And I have played in those games, and it is frustrating. So I do get that. When it's like, you try to, you go, oh, my character is going to do this, and the GM basically, no matter what you do, you're just going to end up doing whatever the GM wants you to.
Right. And
yeah.
I mean, if it's a good GM, they can sort of hide that
right.
enough to where it
I
feels
think
like a
point.
Decision.
So, yeah, so let's talk about the pros of a railroad game.
Sure.
So from the GM standpoint, because I don't think the difference between these two kinds of game is always immediately evident to the
mm.
players at the table, depending on how they're being run. But from a GM standpoint, a railroad game gives you the ability to sort of set up and dictate the story beats that the players encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some common characteristics of a railroad game are time passes in between events in the game that is sort of glossed over. It's like, okay, a couple weeks pass, and then here's this other inciting incident that comes down, and you guys are met with. And it's sort of like an event-based narrative progression. So it's like, here's this thing you're dealing with this session, and the next session, I'm pretty sure you guys are going to be dealing with this thing based on my plan for where the story's going to go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the other cool thing that you were sort of talking about with Railroad Games, I think something that can be really useful as a GM to do is you want to try and disguise the fact that it's a Railroad game, because you don't want your characters to feel like, no matter what they do, they're going to get to the same point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But something you can do is... kind of cheat it a little bit, I think, where you know they're always going to get to the same point, but there's multiple ways that they can get there.
Right.
Right.
In general, and I'm going to make this statement now before we go further, I don't know that I believe there really is such a thing as a true sandbox campaign, because I think even most sandbox campaigns are still largely railroad campaigns. Yeah. That's my hot take right there.
Well, so having a sandbox campaign, I feel like you can do it in the way that, I guess, yes, you're right. Some parts of it can still be railroaded, but on the flip side, what does a super railroaded campaign look like compared to that?
Sure.
So, like, compared to that, it's very much a sandbox. You can go 8 different directions instead of just one, literally just one. If it was like most dungeons starting out are usually just one path through it.
Sure.
They don't want you to get lost through that starting out.
It almost sounds to me like the way to run a good railroad game is just to be very good at making the illusion of choice seem real.
Sure.
If you're not good at that illusion, that's almost what it seems like. Because even when I ran my game,
mm-hmm.
like I needed you guys to get to a particular point. Now, I didn't necessarily have in mind... I had points at which you needed to probably hit to get there, but I was willing to and ready for you all to do it in a completely different way and have to come up with something on the fly.
Sure. I hesitate to say maintain the illusion of choice, because even that seems a bit negative.
Sure, and I don't mean it that way.
But it's I think it's about knowing how to present choices to your players, but then figure out ways to divert the different choices they make back onto a path that moves your plot forward.
And see, to me, that's what I mean. That's essentially what I'm saying.
Right. But the illusion of choice is sort of like that thing where it's like, oh, do you want to go left or you want to go right? And no matter in like the pathway, just sort of like you can go left or right, but both pathways go to the same place.
Yeah, isn't that essential?
But what you don't want is the players to figure out like, oh, what if we go back through this other door? Oh, this pathway takes us back to that room we were in. So no matter which way we went, it was going to go to this room. That's where
sure.
you don't want to have that illusion of choice be traceable back
right, but
in
again,
a railroad campaign.
That, to me, is just not doing it well.
Sure.
I think part of my struggle here in this whole discussion is what's the alternative between either of these two? And I know that's maybe something we'd get to later, but to me, a railroad game, a story is always told in the same basic way. There's a beginning, middle, and end. So... And generally, campaigns are stories, right? And so, sort of like you were saying almost, that every game that you're not sure there really is a sandbox game. What I was trying to say is, in my mind, the difference between railroad and sandbox is there's no, like, thing you're building to.
Because
mm-hmm. otherwise, isn't it always sort of a railroad? Even if you're just, like, doing whatever you want on the in the middle, you're always working towards something, right?
Yeah, but in a sandbox, the beginning... could be the same, but the middle could be like 10 different things, which could also lead to 5 different endings.
Okay.
So you still have a story, but it would vary.
I would say a good railroad does that as well, though. To me, the only way to have a true sandbox game is to have no predetermined story. Like, don't drop people down in a like, hey, there's this overarching growing evil and you have to find a way to defeat it. Just be like, hey, here you are in this place. Where you want to go. And no matter where they go, you have, like, different stories set up there. So it's like, they could choose to just go to the elf lands and deal with the political infighting between all the elf families. But that's not a story that you have set up. That's a story that they choose to explore and you're sort of creating on the fly with the characters. It's like, we want to get real involved
yeah.
in elf stuff.
This,
or you could have gone to the Dwarven Kingdoms and, like, done some other stuff there.
Sounds more to me like the difference between a more pure improv-focused
mm-hmm.
storyline game than a game where the story beats have been planned out.
Right. Well, that's kind of my whole point with this, is like, in saying that I don't think that there really is a true sandbox game, with like maybe the exception of what I just listed.
But I don't know if that exists in a box. You'd literally have to create that by yourself.
What do you mean?
This world that exists where you're like, you start here, go wherever you want.
No, because what you could do is, like, you could buy, like, a campaign setting book. Like, say you want to buy, like, if you're talking D&D, you buy, like, the Forgotten Realms campaign setting.
Right.
And then no matter where your players go, there's already things written into the Forgotten Realms. It's like, oh, here in the Underdark, there's, like, a battle between the Dark Elf houses for stuff. So if your players go there, they're going to be involved in that.
Yeah, sure, but, like, you'd have to read that book cover to cover mm-hmm. five times to be able to do that from memory. Mm-hmm. Even then, you'd have to just stop, be like, okay, what is this area? Let me just read this. Hang on, everybody. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I get the gist. I'll come back to this every 5 minutes, though. So, like, there's no structure plan there unless you do a loose outline anyways. And that's fine. I don't know if a true sandbox game is doable unless you know, like, literally, like, if you did Lord of the Rings and you were a Lord of the Rings buff, like, you could probably do that. But it's probably way more difficult to do a true sandbox. So right. We're talking like RPG sandbox versus like literally wide open, like Dwarven Fortress sandbox or something.
Well, honestly, Roll for Shoes seems a little sandboxy, right? Because it's.
But that's that's typically a one session game. Like to right. do a campaign, we're talking more about like campaigns.
Mm. Sure.
So that's our kind of take on the whether or not sandboxes are actually real, but like let's talk about what a sandbox is typically seen as.
Okay.
And the one example that keeps jumping to mind, just because it's something that I ran most recently, but the Lost Mines of Phandelver, the D&D 5e starter box adventure, is technically a sandbox game
mm-hmm.
in that you are sent to this area, and there are all of these side quests and aspects of the main quest for you to explore, but you are allowed to pick and choose which ones you do in which order. And in the confines of a tabletop RPG, that is typically what people are referring to when they refer to a sandbox.
Sure.
It's you choose which things you tackle when. So you mentioned Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I read an article a couple of years ago that was really great about talking about Lord of the Rings as a sandbox campaign.
Okay.
So it was like Aragorn, and Legolas and Gimli, like, following them around, they have to recruit the army of the dead in order to help them take on the forces of Sauron. They have to reforge this sword that Aragorn had. They have to get the riders of Rohan to join their side. But, you know, we know the order they did those things in Lord of the Rings, but if you were playing that as a campaign, they could have chosen to do any of those things in any order. And then that would have changed the flow of the game. But then the end result is always, after you do those things, you take on the forces of darkness.
So here's my thing, though. Having played in the D&D game you were talking about, mm-hmm. and then having played in, say, like, Wild Cards or any of your other games, I, as a player, don't see the difference. So to me,
that's just
because, like,
I'm real good.
Sure, but to me, like, would you consider Wild Cards to be more of a railroad?
Wild Cards is definitely more of a railroad game.
Okay, so to me, I mean, obviously, there are certain things that you come and present to us and we go after, potentially. But to me, I see no difference. And I do know, like, in that D&D game, it's like, okay, well, there's this thing happening. And then we as a group went, okay, well, we're going to go check out that thing. But arguably, that's the same in Wild Cards in my head, except that maybe in an episode you go, the doctor comes and talks to you all, and we go, okay, well, we'll go look at that.
Right.
But there are any number of other things that we could go, well, I also want to go talk to Harris or whatever that we could do. So effectively for me as a player, those two look exactly the same.
The difference, I think, in the way I run Wild Cards versus a sandbox game is I always give you guys a pressing thing to deal with.
I see.
So it's like, yes, you could investigate any one of these weird plot threads you do, but right now, this person who's right here with you needs your help with this specific thing. To me, that's what makes it more railroady.
Sure, but I don't know that to me is not the definition of the difference between railroad and sandbox.
It kind of is.
Really?
I think.
Like, the way I think of railroad versus sandbox, like, that in a sandbox, things happen when you're not there. It's a living world. So, like, if you go to a town and you get there on the third day of the month, it would be different than if you got there on the 15th day, because on the 10th day, there's a plague that goes through the town, mm-hmm. and, which completely like changes everybody into something else. But if you got there early, you would see why it happened and maybe stop it before it happened. Sure. But that's something you have to keep track of before and after. So like as a GM, you have to be like, you have to have like, this is the town. This is what happens in the time scale of the town. If they get here, this is what's going to happen. If they get here, this is what's going to happen. But like you have to do that for every area almost to make it seem like it's alive. Or you can simulate that more of a sort of cheat it. Basically like be like, when the players get there, in 3 days, this thing will happen. Regardless of when they get there, in 3 days, this thing will happen.
Hmm.
Curse of Strahd is an adventure that does a lot of that, which I like a lot. But it's easier than tracking literally every event in every town in a literal calendar.
Sure. Railroads also have that element of like the living world if you're running it well. But I think it's based more off of the choices the players make. I mean, it is in sandboxes too. But like taking that example that you had there, that's more of a sandbox thing. It's like the first day of the month, it's fine. But on the 10th is when the plague starts. And if they get there on the 15th, then everything's like plague decimated already. Railroads more like what I was talking about. Like I give you this pressing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your inciting incident for that game. If you guys choose to go, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to go investigate something else. That's fine. You can still do that, but there will be repercussions for you guys not helping that person.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be like, well, screw you guys for not helping that person. You are handicapped now, but it's like, you know, you've lost that person as a potential ally. Or you've lost access to a resource that they would have been able to give you if you'd helped them with their problem, or things like that. There's always repercussions for the choices you make.
Sure. I think what this seems like to me is that that elements of Sandbox and Railroad cross over. There's not a completely separate...
In good games, I think.
Sure. It just doesn't feel like they are entirely separate things.
Yeah, the more we talk about this, the more I'm seeing a lot of crossover between elements of Railroad and sandboxes.
It almost seems to me like it's the GM who knows the difference.
Well, yeah, it's. I think we prefer a mix of both of those things. I mean, at least I do. I prefer to have both of those things. I want a good story with a beginning, middle, and end, but I also want some freedom to adjust that story and make it different in the end. Even though if it's going to get to this final boss or final confrontation or whatever, I want things to be different when I get there.
Sure.
Based on what we did.
Sure.
Well, so here's my question for you specifically, Gaurav, since you are still fairly new to Wild Cards, but you played in Ironkeep for a while.
Mm-hmm.
How does Tom, what do you think? Does Tom run his game more Railroad or more Sandbox, and how does it compare to the way Jordan runs his game, just as two GMs?
So Ironkeep is a 5th edition show that we do on Saving Throw, and when we started, we basically did a one-off adventure when we were young, and then we started immediately going into Tales from the Yawning Portal, which is a book that came out earlier this year, and it's just 7 classic dungeons remade for 5th edition.
Okay.
Those dungeons are pretty Railroady.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, however, added a lot of elements of his own to make them better and more fleshed out with story that mattered to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool. And I never played any of those dungeons before, so I didn't know what was old and what was new and what he was adding.
Mm-hmm.
And recently we did 2 of those dungeons, and now we're off on a different direction altogether.
Okay.
So it was Railroady at the start, especially when we were in the dungeon. It felt like we had to get to this thing. We couldn't really leave.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's opened up a lot more. And we're doing... right now we're in Waterdeep doing like side missions and stuff. And having like an interlude before we start our next big adventure. So now it feels a little more sandboxy.
Hmm.
Although I'm not exactly sure where he's going to take us next. So
right. It's
kind of out in the open.
Hmm.
Wild Cards, I would say, is... It feels more Railroady, but I can't tell 100% because I haven't been there enough. But because I was a character that was introduced in the middle, there needed to be a reason for me to show up. And also, like, you guys found me running from bandits in the woods. Mm-hmm. If you guys were just like, nah, see ya. Like, that's a very sandboxy thing you could have done.
Sure.
But it would have been very weird, especially since we're doing it for a show on Twitch.
Right.
It would have been very weird, but I'm like, okay, I'm here in costume. See ya.
Well, it also would have been a jerk move to do to another person at a table. I mean, I think there's a little bit of rules bending no matter what style of campaign you're running when you're doing something like introducing a new player to the table.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, unless your players are super jerks, no one's going to be like, nope, it's a sandbox, so we don't have to care about this guy. Let him die. Let's keep writing.
But that's true sandbox, if you really wanted to. That's why it works better in video games than it does in RPGs, because there's so many moving parts to keep track of, and you'd feel bad because you're not losing a CPU NPC. You're losing a literal person at the table
right.
who came there to play a game. Like, oh, I guess we're not going to hang out.
All right, you're fired.
Yeah.
They weren't compelled by your story, so get out.
See ya.
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind, if you're wanting to try a game that skews more sandbox, that can be overwhelming for new players at a table. Mm. Like, if you're trying to run a game for a new game group, maybe even people that are new to the concept of tabletop RPGs, sandboxes can be a bit intimidating because it's one of those things where you get choice paralysis because you're like, okay, you're in this town, and the barkeep looks like he's... you know, he's upset and having a conversation with his wife, so he could probably use your help. And then you see a posting over there that says adventurers wanted, and down the street it looks like someone's being mugged, and like back out of town it's like, is that a goblin camp back there? You should check that out. People go, I don't know which one is important to do first.
Right.
Yeah, honestly, I gotta say, I don't like that. I really don't. I get choice paralysis in my own life, you know, restaurants and things. Like, I would rather... And maybe this is me coming at it from a drama or theater or acting background, but I want to play in that like epic story that has a particular place I'm supposed to go. I personally really enjoy that because that feels better to me. Now, having said that, I understand that if I picked any one of those things, it could also lead that way in a sandbox, but it stresses me out.
Well, yeah. And I think, okay, so here's the most negative aspect of a railroad game. I played in a game one time where it was very important to the story that all of the PCs be publicly killed mm-hmm. so that they could be resurrected in secret to go on a mission. We didn't know that at the time. Mm-hmm. We just knew we were going to be publicly killed. And one of the PCs at the table was like, okay, I'm not cool with this. I don't want to be executed in public. I'm going to try to escape. And the GM was like, okay, well, you'd have to make this really high roll in order to be able to escape from the situation. So the PC was like, okay, I'll try. And they did it. They actually rolled a nat 20 mm-hmm. on the thing. And it was like, we were all like, yeah, they get away. And the GM was like, okay, like you get away for a little bit, but then the guards grab you and bring you back up to be killed. And we were like, okay. But we did the thing that you said we had to do. And in that instance, that was where the illusion slipped away. And it was like, okay, no, the GM is going to force us to be killed. No decision we make, no place we go will end with us not being killed because mm-hmm. that's what they've decided is important for their story.
Right.
That's the worst aspect of a railroad game. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff you want to avoid because I think back to that game a lot in my GM philosophy, like trying to move forward with the way that I do stories. And I think about all of the interesting things that would have happened if that one PC had escaped.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, all of these people are publicly killed except for this one person who is then seen with all of these supposedly dead people. Like, you know, what sort of interesting wrinkles does that lead to down the line? And how much richer of a story could that have been if the GM had gone with the way the dice rolled? Because that's what happens at a table. Mm-hmm. You can set up these stories, but you still are, you know, you're subject to the whims of chance
right.
in a lot of games. And you sort of have to go with it and just see what happens as a result. Mm-hmm. Like in Wild Cards, I try and let your choices have weight, even though I admit I'm running more of a railroad style game.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys get really lucky in combat and kill a major NPC that I had more plans with down the line, it's like, okay, I mean, they're dead now. Those plans are capped off. That did happen this season.
Right, yeah, that happened.
Those plans are capped off. I got to mm-hmm. come up with something new now. But, like, you guys took ownership of the world in that way, and, like, you were like, no, we're going to kill this person.
Really
and
horribly.
And you did? Yeah. And and things, you know, keep moving, because that's mm-hmm. what you have to do. You have to be able to adapt and change like that. So the best sort of railroads, I think, are kind of able to jump on a bunch of tiny little tracks that are different, all heading sort of the same direction, but diverting in ways that are affected by what the characters choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even in Wild Cards again, which we're referencing this a lot, so, you know, if you have no familiarity with the show, I'm sorry. but largely they're in one Western town. You guys, if at any point you chose to be like, screw it, let's leave this place, I don't care about it and I don't want to be here anymore, I would go, fine.
Right.
Like, let's go do that. But there would be major repercussions for you guys down the line if you chose to do that. Because, like, this town won't survive without you guys there.
So you're punishing us?
No.
I'm kidding. No, I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean.
Yeah, and I think that's where railroaded games get a bad rap. I think you can marry the systems much more than a lot of people tend to consider.
I feel like you should. If you can. I mean, you know, that they're taking those two separate elements are really great together. Like
yeah.
you were saying,
yeah.
Grove, yeah.
And I think like any point of a story that you're building, like the beginning, middle, end, should have like maybe three ways to go, maybe just that you've planned. And then the players could maybe add their own completely different direction to take that. So then you're still sort of on rails, but it's a web of rails that can
right.
go all sorts of places.
Which
yeah.
some people would classify as a sandbox game. So I think maybe what we're running into in talking about this,
mm-hmm.
a true railroad gives the players no agency
sure.
in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
A true
Which
sandbox.
Would be bad.
Right. A true sandbox has no story, but gives the players complete agency.
Which is also bad, in my mind.
I think so. I
yeah.
think both of those things are not fun games to play in or run.
But some people might like both or one of those.
Some
sure.
people
and
might.
That's what they want to do.
That's
what they want to do.
Yeah.
But in general, I think most game tables' fun is found somewhere in between those
yes,
two.
I agree.
Maybe heading more towards a railroad, but still allowing players their agency to shift tracks, but still be heading the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Or more towards the sandbox, where there's more of a story and like big, large beats that happen,
mm-hmm.
but still the players are allowed to sort of follow their interests and the things that they attach meaning to in the story in the game.
I think so.
So, wow, we sort of started off trying to talk about something different, and instead I think we happened on something somewhat revelatory,
yeah.
guys.
We did. Oh, my gosh.
Kind
my...
of like a sandbox.
Oh. Or was this always what
Where
I was
we
trying
going?
To head you guys towards, and I was guiding the conversation this whole time in subtle but measured ways?
Well, it's not what this outline right down here says.
That's not a real outline. You pointed to a blank table space, Groff.
You ruined it. You ruined my immersion.
I'm giving them a peek behind the curtain to the fact that you just pointed at nothing, Groff. There is no outline there. There's nothing there.
Use your imagination.
Oh, okay. I think it's time for the question of the sode.
Sode.
So today's question of the sode comes from the D&D subreddit, or the D&D Next subreddit, I guess.
Yeah, there's a specific one for 5th edition.
Yeah, which
is...
I did not know, but now I know.
Mm.
and the question is, how do you introduce a new city or area to players? In order to not overwhelm them with facts, while at the same time painting a picture with gaps they are able to fill in themselves. In other words, how do you introduce a new city or area with a strong mental image? Which I think is a really good question.
It is a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you definitely just don't want to suddenly unload on your players with like an atlas entry on the town or city they're in. It's like, the population's 100,000 people, and it is a principality. And what that means is, you know, you're going to totally lose your players' attention immediately with
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
Well, and you can't maintain that in your brain. I mean, even taking notes of that, you'd be like, what does this population have to do with anything?
But I think there's a bunch of interesting shortcuts that you can use to make that work. And it's going to depend sort of on your style as a GM. So what do you do, Gaurav, in these instances?
So I had mentioned before, and I think this was in our horror episode, that I mentioned about using music and sound as a way to introduce characters into a game. So whenever a certain villain or NPC that you like shows up in your game, you can have some sort of like background music for them that reminds the players that, oh, this is that same person that we met before because of the music. I recognize that. It's kind of, they use this a lot in like movies and TV shows to kind of tease or show off a big bad or somehow.
I really like that idea. It's like giving all the characters like their own sort of personal theme, or I guess the important characters.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can use that with places as well, I think. So whenever they come back home, they can hear the serene waterfall that's next to their home and the chitter chatter of the chickens and the chicken coop.
And some great alliteration there, Garoth.
yeah.
Well, I've not really had much opportunity to do this myself, but I know that I'll jump on sort of what you've done, Jordan. Is that you sort of tell or explain the town through the NPCs and through the way that they talk about the town, they act, or the things they don't talk about.
Yeah.
Is one way you do it. And I feel like I'm trying to think I'm trying to think of an example of when Wes Otis has done it in one of the games that I play. I feel
well,
like
real
he...
quick though, because oh. you say you haven't had a lot of opportunity to do this because mm-hmm. you've only run one game of right. Magic and Mischief. But one thing you did in that game mm-hmm. was you set the game at Hogwarts in the future. So you basically gave us a scenario or an area that most people are familiar with. You were like, it's Hogwarts. And then you told us how it was different than the Hogwarts we know. And that sure. can be a really useful shortcut as well. You can be like, this is essentially the Death Star, but here are the differences. And mm-hmm. that kind of immediately cues people into stuff like they're familiar with.
That
and
is
kind of shortcuts their brains into picturing something.
That is a really quick way. If there's something like, you, everybody knows this, but it's here's how it's different. Yes, that's a really quick way to do that.
Yeah. But yeah, like you were saying, one of my strengths is NPCs. That's one of the things that I really enjoy doing as a GM. And I like to use them to paint the picture of an area. Like you said, like the things they're excited about and they talk about, but also the things that they keep secret, the things that they act weird about when someone mentions it. You kind of get a feeling for a place based on the flavor and color that the people that live there bring.
Mm-hmm.
So like in our home game that we ran, the Secret Worlds, Savage Worlds game that I ran for you guys, it was sort of like an idyllic small town in the Pacific Northwest. And everyone was really pleasant and upbeat about stuff, almost to a slightly unsettling degree. But then there's just certain things that they don't like talking about. Like, they wouldn't talk about the college in the town. And
right.
you guys were like, why? What's weird there?
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of, like the question was leaving the players gaps to fill things in with their own imagination. You can paint these sort of big glaring holes that they go, okay, something's important there, and they start trying to figure out why or, like, what that means.
Yeah.
And that can give them kind of, like, a picture in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, negative space can be used to fill in details in an entirely different way.
I really think that's sort of what it comes down to. Less is more in that. I think it's just about a few very specific things, and that's really all you need. Anything more can get muddy or even take away from mm-hmm. the thing you're trying to create.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if your players ask, like, specific questions about things, like they want to know some particular detail about something, like, you know, throw that out there for sure. And if you haven't planned it ahead of time, make it up on the spot and be
mm-hmm.
sure you write it down so that you can remember it later.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's key. Write it down.
Yeah,
sure
yeah.
you write that
make
down.
A note to yourself because you don't want to be the person
yeah.
that's like, yeah, the local government, it's a town council.
Yeah.
And then introduce them to the president of this town or
right.
whatever later on. They're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This doesn't jive with what we knew before.
One player in your party is going to write that down and be like, wait.
Yeah.
I know.
but yeah, I think there's a bunch of different ways. And it just kind of goes back to what your strengths and comfortable areas are as a GM.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of come from there. Like, Gaurav uses outside elements, which is a really cool way to do it and kind of instantly ties in the players. I like to do it through NPCs. Megan gave us a quick dose of, like, what's familiar and how it's different. So all
mm-hmm.
of those things are completely viable ways to fill in information.
Yeah.
Cool.
What do you think?
I think we did it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
oh,
we
nailed it. Do we say this every time?
I think we do.
Every time we go, I think we did this pretty good.
Well, we always nail it, so.
We do.
That's
yeah.
good
uh-huh.
again.
Let's good.
Let's good.
Let's good.
Let's good. Let's good.
And on the note of let's gooding, I'm going to segue that into us wrapping it up.
Cool.
Wrap it up.
Let's good it up.
Let's good it up. Okay. Well, I am Megan Caves, and as I said, I do RPGs, so we all know that now. Anyway, you
why
can
are you
follow
shouting
me.
At us?
Because you all,
right here.
You all made me feel weird. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at Megan Caves. It's MEGHANCAVES. And you can also, I guess we can get to this, but I'll go ahead and say it. You can also follow us at EXP Pointers Pod on Twitter. Please ask us questions. As you can see, we might make a whole episode about that question.
Or just a part of it.
Or send us your thoughts, whatever. Interact with us. We love interacting with people.
Yeah. My name is Jordan Caves Callerman. You can find me on Twitter at Jordan Callerman. That's CALLARMAN. And yeah, also, if you're enjoying Experience Pointers, please feel free to spread the word about us. We love, you know, finding new people through word of mouth is great, but also leave us a review where you listen to the podcast or just subscribe, whatever it is you can do on that particular platform you're listening to us. The more stuff like that we get, the easier it is for new people to find us, and we really appreciate it.
I'm Gaurav Gulati, and you can find me on Twitter at DoubleGXG. That's the word double. GXG, and then also on Twitch at twitch.tv/doublegxg.
And then also, you can find all of us on the Twitch channel Saving Throw, streaming several times a week. Megan and I have a video game show that we do on Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
Megan and Gaurav play in a D&D 5e show on Wednesday nights.
Ironkeep.
All three of us play in a Savage Worlds Deadlands Reloaded show on Friday nights.
Wild cards.
Yep. And then Gaurav also has his own Twitch channel that he streams on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I already mentioned it, but I'm going to mention it again.
Do it.
Twitch.tv/doublegxg.
That's mm-hmm. the one.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you want to get this podcast a week early, we do release it on the Saving Throw Show Patreon for $10 backers and up.
So yeah, if you just absolutely cannot wait to see what new cool phrases we're going to coin each week, like let's good and
good
other
one.
Things, but mostly that one, then yeah, consider becoming a patron.
We're one for one right now.
We are, but man, we're really, that's a good one.
There are going to be so many more.
Yeah.
So I guess until next time, guys, let's good. Yeah, with feeling.